Life on Tap, episode 24.
Meet me at the bar, meet me at the bar. We're gonna get loaded, so don't bring your car. Meet me at the bar, meet me at the bar. You better make it there no matter where you are. Friday night after a long ass week of work. Your coworkers are morons, your boss a fucking jerk.
Welcome to episode 24 of Life on Tap, a podcast about life and beer from the heart of central New Jersey. I'm Dan on Tap. Our intro music comes to us via the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. It's the Beer Drinking Fools with Meet Me at the Bar. Check out their website at www.beerdrinkingfools.org. First of all, I want to say a happy new year and also a thank you to all you returning listeners and a welcome to all you new listeners out there. Just want to start off by saying the Giants, yeah, they're in the Super Bowl against the Patriots. And yeah, you think that a New Jerseyan such as myself would causing a big deal out there with a lot of the other New England podcasters out there. But honestly, it's, you know, I love the Giants and everything. I'm from Jersey. You know, I support them and everything. But it's probably going to be a boring Super Bowl for the record. So, you know, there's not much we can really do about that.
Bon appetit.
Okay, in other news, I'm finally going to be reviewing a Solo NYC. Cheryl was supposed to have joined me originally to do this review. Unfortunately, her memory has kind of faded since then, A, and B, time-wise, our schedules have been murdered lately. So, in the case, here it comes. You can reach your website at www.solonyc.com. It's actually owned by the same people who own the Prime Grill. And just for the record out there, it is a glatt kosher restaurant for those people who are interested in that aspect of it. We were about six of us there. We went out for Cheryl's birthday party, and we were there with her parents and her two sisters and myself, and we actually split a Moscato, which I believe was an 04, I believe. I don't remember the label offhand. I didn't have the bill, so unfortunately I didn't write that down, but it was quite enjoyable. I mean, Moscato's can be very, very, very sweet, and sweet's not usually my taste, but this one was excellent. It had a very fine taste. It was well balanced, and it wasn't too overly sweet like some Moscatos can be, so very, very enjoyable overall. The appetizers we led off with, we had this bruschetta, which was just very simple, plain, straightforward, which is very yummy. There was a fish trio, which I believe offhand was tuna, salmon, and whitefish, and each of them were served in a different manner. I think the tuna was served on a cracker. I don't remember exactly what it was. A bunch of these had disappeared from the menu. We also had the pickled veal tongue, which I believe is still in the menu. That was quite lovely. The veal sweetbreads, which were served on top of another set of veal kind of egg rolls or spring rolls with them. It was really, really good. And we also got the barbecue short rib spring rolls as well. Those were all quite enjoyable. I have to admit that those five appetizers we had, I believe we had two of the sweetbreads, if memory serves, but they were absolutely lovely. I mean, if you just check out their menu, you could pretty much order anything on their appetizer menu and it would be excellent, I would have to admit. The chili plum sauce specifically with the barbecue short rib was very enjoyable, I do recall. Now, the entrees were not nearly as impressive as the appetizers were, I felt. I mean, I tried a little bit of everyone, so it was pretty interesting. Cheryl's father had the halibut on the menu, so... And it was, I think, the sides of the halibut were even more impressive than the halibut itself. I mean, the slice of halibut was a very generous piece. Servings were all very generous or whatnot. It's just that they just didn't jump out at me, as neither did the strip steak, which is kind of odd because when they brought out the strip steak for Cheryl's mom, there were two halves of it. One was definitely a lot more steaky or meaty, so to speak. And it was cooked very medium rare. And then the ends were almost like very, very, very cooked. And so they were almost like briskety. So it was interesting that you had a strip steak, but yet you really almost got the taste of two or even three different steaks within the meal. So I don't know if that was what they intended to do or if that is just by accident. But I mean, both sides were tasty to a degree, but the whole dish didn't really blend itself and it really wasn't their strongest suit. All the sisters had a veal chop special, which I memory serves was within a white wine sauce. And it was actually pretty good. It was very tasty, very, very nice. The slices of the chop, though, differed greatly. While her youngest sister's piece was very meaty. Cheryl's piece was tremendously fatty, so I'm not sure who does the supplying there, but but it was tasty. Its best parts were very tasty. Its worst parts were very fatty. And the sides for that were very good, although me personally, I, of course, preferred my entree the best. My entree was a permanent fixture in the menu, the roasted stuffed veal chop, and this was extremely tasty. It was juicy, it was fatty where it needed to be a little be fatty, that was meaty when it needed to be meaty, and it wasn't too gamey, so it was a very good blend. It was cooked perfectly, it was a great temperature when it came out. It was served with these amazing golden scallion, like squarely cut polenta fries. And, you know, I'm not a huge fan of polenta, soft or hard, or harder for that matter, but these were really, really tasty. And you know, not like corn is like the best thing for you or whatnot, but these were very, very tasty. I mean, I could eat a plate just of these alone. And the dried fruit compote, I have to admit, that they put on top of the veal chop itself, those flavors blended nicely with the spicing on the veal chop itself, and I really enjoyed that. And the braised radicchio was pretty good too, although it was a lesser part of the whole deal. But like I said, the polenta fries alone, I think, made the dish worth it. We also picked up a couple sides. We had the stir-fried Japanese eggplant, which, once again, the sides, the appetizers were amazing, and the Japanese eggplant was no different. And it was extremely tasty, kind of almost like a teriyaki style sauce which go with it, basically. But the eggplant was cooked perfectly. It was had a little bit of a hardness, but it was a softness to the inside, yet a kind of almost a crispness on the outside where of the skin, which was really tasty. It provided this great texture in your mouth, mixed in with a great flavor, a little bit of umami, a little bit of sweetness, a little bit of tanginess. It just worked out really, really well. The second side that we ordered was very interesting. It was a double baked potato, what they call potato mashed Benedict. Now, obviously, Benedict is traditionally made with bacon, and obviously, this is a kosher restaurant, so bacon would not be used. So, what they did is they used toasted beef bits. I'm guessing they took some of the ends of the meat, basically, and they dried them out incredibly with salt and a whole array of other spices, and they kind of toasted them just like you would bacon to kind of get that same consistency. And it was actually quite interesting. They also flavored it with a whole bunch of cayenne and green and black peppers, basically, and so it had a little bit of kick to it, although it was almost like, you know, it did almost taste exactly like, you know, your eggs Benedict, say, on English muffin, except in this case, they double baked it over potatoes as opposed to, say, an English muffin or a bagel. And very, very inventive, I'd have to say. I mean, I don't usually see that very often. I mean, except on a baked potato, you see the bacon, sour cream, etc. But this, I thought, was very inventive and quite enjoyable. For dessert, which is, of course, everyone's favorite time to talk, we split three things. The warm apple strudel, which I thought was pretty much run-of-the-mill. They had a trio of sorbets. I believe it was mango, coconut, and I want to say peach, and which were pretty good. But I really felt that the coup de grace of the three desserts was the Jack Daniel's chocolate mousse with Kahlua cream sauce. And they gave you an extremely generous piece. I mean, this piece was probably about 5 to 6 inches long. It probably about an inch and a half tall. And then at its widest point, probably also close to an inch and a half. So it was a very generous piece or whatnot, and it was extremely rich. And the Jack Daniels kind of gave it that little edge to it. You know, you might taste like, you know, the Jack Daniels sauces or marinades or, you know, either at TGI Fridays or commercially speaking. And, you know, those are great on meats or whatnot, but this was very interesting because, you know, JD isn't always used in that kind of dessert manner. And I felt that it kind of gave the chocolate this nuance of not burnt but like this almost toasty nuance to the mousse that actually paired surprisingly quite well with the Kahlua cream sauce. And it was and obviously it was par of cream sauce since they obviously can't use milk with the meal, but all things considered, a truly excellent dessert. They actually sprinkled also some strips of caramel around the plate to make it all pretty, and the presentation, I have to admit, for pretty much almost every dish was pretty much spot on. Like I said before, the only one I really had an issue with was the strip steak. as far as that was concerned. But overall, a really lovely experience. It is a bit on the expensive side of things in general. I mean, if you go in a group of people and you split out, you even split appetizers at this place, honestly. I mean, the entrees are really good by themselves too. But this, I mean, you can totally order what you want by yourself and then split it with people. I mean, that's totally what we did. And it was really, really enjoyable. So I really recommend that. I'd like to play a song just to break up the mix a little bit here. And this week's featured song is Come Back by Causeway. And they actually are from New Jersey, so we're showing our solidarity this week to New Jersey. It comes to us via the PodSave Music Network at music.podger.com. They can be reached at www.myspace.com/causewaymusic. Enjoy.
She said to run away, 'cause you won't cry. And I try to keep the pace, and I shut my eyes, but I can't run any faster. No, I can't run any faster. Thank you.
We are back from the break, and that can mean only one thing.
I like my beer cold.
Takes a beer. I want a beer.
Here's a beer.
Beer, it's your best friend. You drink a lot.
Hey, who wants to play Drink the Beer?
Right here.
You win.
All right. What do I win?
Another beer.
You want to know what I love? Beer, Norm? Yeah, have a quick one.
Beer of the Week.
This week's Beer of the Week is the Oaked Arrogant Bastard. This one comes to us from Stone. And it clearly says in the front of the bottle that you are not worthy. And it's probably true. Weighs in at a 7.2 ABV. I'm going to pour this from its bottle. Pour it's really nice. Just a very, very light head at the top. Oh, wow. It's like towards the end, it almost looks syrupy. It's kind of scary. All right. Nice reddish hue-ish color. I'd say a little bit more opaque than the original of its kind. Wow, that's powerful. You can just smell the hops off of that. And the malts, too. Here we go. Wow. I mean, the Arrogant Bastard really punches you in the face, basically, but this is great. It's got, like, a simple initial taste, and then you can really taste the complexity staying all different parts of your tongue. I mean, you can taste the malt and the hops, and you can definitely taste... I'm not even sure what that is. It's like this berry and nut taste hitting the back of my mouth, and with a little bit of bitterness from the hops, but really nice. But the Arrogant Bastard would you? I definitely would. I mean, if you enjoy, you know, very complex and very sophisticated beers, anything from Stone is really definitely a good way to go. But in specifically speaking, wow, this stuff is really, really, really nice. Definitely recommend it. So, Oaked Arrogant Bastard, I'll have a link in the show notes and on the Beers of the Week. Okay, I'm going to be playing the first of the next segment, and it's called the Barstool. And in essence, what it is is that I'm going to open the forum to you guys out there, to all you listeners out there, and I would like to get you guys to come on the show, and I want you to talk about your favorite beer or your favorite wine, your favorite liquor, your favorite dining experience or whatnot. You know, something to really kind of give us a glimpse into your neck of the woods, whether it be in the United States or anywhere else in the world, basically. Because one of the things I really do want to encourage, basically, is the free flow of the tremendous variety of food and beverage out there that everyone can really appreciate if they can gain access to it in their neck of the woods. Otherwise, if you're traveling, gives you a tremendous opportunity to go ahead and try that out. So our first bar stool ever is going to be brought to you by the one, the only, Scotty J.
Hey, how's it going? Come on over. Pull up a stool. Let me pour you a cold one. You can tell me all about it.
I'm Scotty J., perpetual podcast guest and wine aficionado. Visit my audio resume at scottjosephson.com. I celebrated my first New Year's Eve in New England at an upscale party. The setting, Vinalia, a classy wine bar, lounge, and restaurant located at 34 Summer Street, caught between the downtown crossing and financial district neighborhoods of Boston, Massachusetts. Their unique concept to ring in 2008 was the first of hopefully an annual tradition. They termed it Passport to 2008, an hors d'oeuvres and wine pairing event that spans the globe of culinary sensations to stamp your palate straight into the following year. We were handed a card to act as our physical passport and guided to the first of two tasting rooms, beginning the festivities in the Douro region of Portugal with the Ramos Pinto Adriano White, accompanied by thickly sliced cubes of ham. A classic tasting white, it was not memorable, but a fine entrance to the evening. Moving on to Argentina, we were greeted with stuffed clams and a Crios de Susana Balbo Rosé of Malbec, a light and sweet departure from the Ramos Pinto, originating in the Mendoza area of the South American nation. Next on the list was Germany and its traditional fare of Bratwurst, alongside the fantastic Muskass for Seconds Esse Prum Essence Riesling from the Moselle-Saar-Ruhr region. Without question, this was my favorite pour of the event. Red was in order, so we stopped by Down Under for Australia's McLaren Vale region for some Hugh Hamilton Jim Jim Shiraz and succulent tender mini lamb chops from the party's lone carving station. This strong red played well with the most enticing aperitif of the evening. Close by was the Tohu Sauvignon Blanc from New Zealand's Marlborough region. I was too entranced by the green-bellied mussels to pay much heed to the wine, and at this point was starting to feel pretty good from my tour de force. We could not leave the A-room without a taste of Tuscany, the refreshing Vigna Maggio Terra di Prezzano Chianti Classico with, you guessed it, lasagna. Chianti always seems to be one of those timeless wines that make any event into a lasting memory, and this one did not deviate. Across the dance floor and into the B-room, the first stop was the Rías Baixas region of Spain for Tostadas and Laxas Albarino. This sweet Spanish wine was reminiscent of fruit and changed my perspective after expecting sangria. Japan's Kyoto Prefecture offered chilled Tozai Living Jewel Junmai Sake, a first for me being accustomed to having my rice wine served warm. What better pairing with sake than sushi? In this case, tekamaki roll, and that's tuna for those of you playing the home game. We had to pay tribute to the good old USA. From California's north coast came a fine red, Rock and Vine Cabernet Sauvignon. While not familiar with this vineyard, I couldn't think of a better wine to serve with, what else, sliders. That's right, mini hamburgers. What baffled me came next, chicken wings from South Africa. The only hors d'oeuvre I didn't try, as I was filled to the brim and wanted to save some space for dessert, but I did enjoy its Wildekrans Pinotage from Walker Bay, with more of a raspberry taste than anything. An old potent favorite awaited from Chile's Rapel Valley, Santa Rita Reserva Carmenere, and its spicy stuffed cherry peppers counterpart. I've had this Carmenere before with Dan on Tap, and it never ceases to renew my love affair with a strong red wine. At 11 p.m., the A and B room shut down, and the 12th and final country was revealed. France. Offering two separate champagnes from the Epimay region, overflowing flutes of Perrier Jouet Grand Brut or Nicolas Fiulet Blue Label were easily accessible, adjacent to the chocolate fondue buffet, with plentiful strawberries, marshmallows, and pound cake for ample dipping. Considering the event took place on New Year's Eve, one might think a costly price tag would be associated with such an event, with staggering admission fees to no-frills clubs without open bars nearing $100 in many major U.S. cities. Vinalia offered this celebration for only $75, with a measly $7.50 online fee for advance tickets. There was no limit to the number of times one could visit a station for additional tastings of both food and drink. Vinalia also offers a weekly wine and cheese tasting on Wednesday evenings. For more information, visit their website at www.vinaliaboston.com. This is Scotty J, and thanks for listening. If you like what you heard, check out my work at scottjosephson.com.
Once again, I'd like to give a thank you out to Scotty J for being so kind as to donate this tremendous first example of what a bar stool is all about. If I am in the area next year, I fully do intend to take advantage of the program he took advantage of. It sounded amazing. Anything involving pairings and that tremendous great array of food sounds really, really a lot of fun. And if you're doing it with friends, it's even better. Now, we're talking about doing a New Brunswick crawl in the spring. Now, it's coming up on the planning segment already. So I'm thinking it's going to be the first week of spring break for Rutgers, which I believe is the weekend of March 8th. So if anyone out there is interested, basically, please drop me a line. I probably will be posting a tentative itinerary, provided I can Dave and I can get together and put that together or whatnot. So if you are interested, once again, please let me know. And if you're interested in submitting a bar stool or any other type of feedback or whatnot, let me know how you can get a hold of us. You can contact us at LifeOnTap at LifeOnTap.net or visit us on the web at www.LifeOnTap.net, on MySpace at MySpace.com/LifeOnTap. I can be reached on Twitter and Skype at NewType2001, and I can also be reached on Facebook. Our voicemail line is 206-339-8808. And as always, our outro music is Bubblegum and Beer by the Super Suckers. And remember, life's a tap. Drink up till it's dry. Chewing bubblegum, drinking beer.